You are listening to the Brighton Book Club on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, a monthly show about books and writing in Brighton and beyond. We have a slightly different show to usual today when I am joined by two Brighton-based writers, Kristen Bernardston and Duncan Illing, who are here to talk about the process of turning a short story into a radio play. We discuss lots, such as books that have inspired them, but then we also take a deep dive into the technical process of getting a book from page to the airwaves. I hope you enjoy. I am joined today in the Brighton Book Club studio by Kristen Bernardston and Duncan Illing to talk about Kristen's wonderful short story Anne and the process of bringing that into the audio format. So welcome to the Brighton Book Club, Duncan and Kristen.
Hello there.
Hello. Hello.
So you are both active members of Brighton's writing community. How did this happen? Duncan, I'll start with you.
How did this happen? Well, I'd known Kristen for a while anyway. We were both members of the West Hill Writers Group. So Kristen's story appeared in the anthology that came out a couple of years ago, now coming up to a couple of years ago. And Kristen reached out to a group on WhatsApp, and I'd done production work in the past, mainly in music, and was up for doing it. I've always wanted to do a project like this anyway, and it was a lot of fun. So yeah, that's how it came about, through that we'd known each other a couple of years.
And what do you work on in your own writing, Duncan? Where's your part in the market?
At the moment, I write fiction. I've written memoir. At the moment, I'm working on a novel. At the moment, set in Silicon Valley, that looks at the kind of the Machiavellian dark arts of the tech industry. I've worked in the music industry and the tech industry, so I'm also at the moment I do a regular Substack as well called Duncan Illing Writes, which is a cultural journey through technological change, as I like to call it, and I have a memoir as well, around which I've written already, around the collapse of the music industry, but in particular my experiences at EMI Music as well, which sadly is no more. They're the things I'm focused on at the moment. I'd like to also dramatize or do an audio version of my short story, which appeared in the anthology Let the Good Times Roll, but I need to get to that at some point, probably later in the year.
Wonderful. Well, we'll definitely go back to the production process. Kristen, can you tell us more about yourself and your writing?
Oh, thanks. Well, to answer your earlier question, I got involved with the local creative community because I hadn't been writing. I'd been journaling, and then saw the sign for West Hill Writers and decided to join as a bit of stress relief from a very stressful job, and attended about half the sessions because my very stressful job took up the majority of my time. And being the A-type personality that I used to be, I think I came into the group announcing I was going to write a novel, which was a bit of a stretch because I really hadn't written anything except for very angry journal entries. But since joining West Hill Writers, I feel very fortunate. I've gained a wonderful, wonderful local creative community. I've since then gone on to get several qualifications, including an MA in screenwriting from the University of Arts London. I gained an agent for the novel that I eventually wrote. So it's nothing but positive. Brighton is quite special with its creative community because you can be sitting next to someone in a group who's just journaling like I used to be, and then the person to the other side of you can have won a BAFTA or be nominated for an Oscar, and no one makes a fuss. You know, it's a very egalitarian, democratic place for that, which I think adds to the richness and the friendliness of the creative communities here.
Duncan, I would love to know what you have learned about the writing and publishing industry that you didn't really have any idea about before you started.
Well, I returned to writing about 5 years ago when I moved down to Brighton. And in that time, so it was some of the things, there's three main things that jump out to me, really. The first thing is a lot of writers actually earn most of their income from actually teaching writing rather than selling books. That was a big learning for me. And Secondly, there's a lot of great writers out there that can't afford courses as well. And I guess the third thing is the publishing industry itself is still very far from being socioeconomically diverse and representative of its potential reader market, which I still find kind of staggering. So there's some of my takeaways. I think overall, really, you to write, you must have the compulsion to do so. You must need to do it, and it's all about writing and writing and writing and reading a lot around your genre, and more broadly as well, really, and about sharing your work with people that can give you constructive feedback to make your work better, to improve it.
Absolutely. How about you, Kristen? Because I know that you've had a bit of a wild ride of it.
Yeah, I have. So some of the best advice I've received by a veteran of the British publishing industry that was also echoed by someone who is a leader and a veteran of the British film industry is that even when you've won all the awards, you've had all the sales, you've had all the success, you're still hustling. You're still having to negotiate. You're still working at your craft. It absolutely never stops. And that's something that is appealing to me, but is also quite, is also terrifying. So yes, it's just basically, it's one of those, it's not an industry for people who are not able to persevere and bounce back.
Absolutely. Resilience is definitely a
Yeah.
key part of writing. So let's talk about Anne, your short story, Kristen. How did this story and this plot come to you? Can you tell us a bit about what Anne is about?
Sure, no problem. So, as Duncan mentioned, Anne was published in the West Hill Writers Anthology, which a lot of work was done on by two members of the group, J.E. and Ellie, and yourself, actually. So that was fantastic. And I'm sure there was others that were really involved. But, coming together with an anthology, especially around the time we were doing it was during COVID, is that right? I don't recall. It's a bit like wrangling cats and kind of pushing things through. So I had wrangled some cats and kind of, encouraged people along. And I think I was the last person to write their short story. And I was taking a weekend or a weekday course with Susanna Waters in Lewis. She runs a course called Storyworks. And I was having some pressure on me to come up with the short story. And when I was leaving this course, I waited for my train and basically just had one of those wonderful eureka moments sitting there. I was thinking about female archetypes. I was thinking about relationships between mothers and daughters. I was thinking about societal expectations of women. And so it just kind of came to me. And it was very playful. It was a really fun idea for me to develop, and I had a lot of joy during the process.
How did the story change when you were bringing it into the audio format?
Well, okay, so I was recommended by Susanna and some others that it felt like it should be something that should be read for radio. And when the opportunity came up, I was actually asked to read it. And I hemmed and I hawed for 3 weeks and I stared at this microphone and I did some practicing. And I like to think I read my stories relatively well, but all the practicing just, it sounded so boring to me. And I thought it was going to be a really boring experience for any listener. And I didn't want to give that to them. So even though I hadn't done it before, with 7 days to go, I thought, right, okay, I'm going to turn this into a radio play. And whilst we were rehearsing a couple of the actors, it became very, very evident that I had to make it into dialogue quick. And so I changed it into a script as quickly as I could. Then, during the post-production process with Duncan, we made some further executive decisions to make some further cuts because the words that were necessary in written form just were redundant, in audio form.
That's really interesting. Duncan, as a writer yourself, but also as a kind of producer of audio, how did you find the process?
It's a lot of fun. I think we kind of underestimate the amount of hours it would take, but it was, it was great the to be a part of this. And it was about I think it was kind of like putting together a jigsaw at times as well, because there's obviously lots of takes and lots of special effects and lots of people contributed audio to this. And it was generally, a great experience. I had a lot of fun doing it. Christian fueled us with some cake and some nice snacks along the way as well. It's a lot of fun. I'd do it again.
We
Well,
will.
That's always a good sign. So, Christian, we are going to listen to Anne now. Can you introduce your wonderful short story, Now Radio Play, to us?
Yes, thank you. This is Anne by me, Kristen Berniston.
Until 11 and a half months ago, I didn't know that I had sisters. Today they are coming to stay for the first time. I've been up with the sun to get ready. My kids are at school. I love them, but thank fuck, my husband is picking them up after work and taking them to a friend's where they'll stay over. Catherine's? Or is it Camilla's? I lose track of all the married mums who fawn over him. We don't have the room. Plus, my husband embarrasses me with his awkward humour and his tendency to dominate with monologues about whatever is on his mind. When others speak, especially if the speaker is female, he turns up the music or wanders away. Fight or flight, passive aggressive, call it what you want. Whichever you choose, he does this to me a lot. Today, everything must be perfect. Oh, I wish I had a cleaner. Is that anti-feminist of me, or can I still be feminist and want one? It can be a straight white guy, as long as he cleans naked. I won't touch him. Just look. Will he charge extra for that? I better hurry. My middle sister Maria arrives at 3.
Babes!
Hello, darling. I bend down to give her 2 kisses, one on each cheek, demonstrating my continentalism. Is this a word? Oversized shades and a large brimmed hat hide her face. So I improvise and find a spot beneath each earlobe, realizing afterwards with no dearth of embarrassment how intimate I've been. I show her where she'll be sleeping. It's our bedroom. Out of politeness, I'm absconding to my 13-year-old's room, plastered with pictures of Lady Gaga and Taylor Swift.
I'll just freshen up, and then I'll come down to help.
Her accent is American, but unlike mine, Latina sounding. She enunciates fast, like a Chopin piano solo. No need. I've got it. You're my guest. Just rest.
True. But you know I can't sit still when there's something to be organized.
I don't point out that... No. I don't know. This is only the second time we've met in person, discounting our many Zoom calls.
My. What a beautiful home.
It isn't. But I am grateful for her politeness and that my cleaning paid off. Why, thank you. Prosecco?
Si. I'll fetch the glasses.
No, you don't. Sit down. I'll get them. I open the cupboard and spot a red stain at eye level. Damn it. I reach for the paper towel, but too late. Maria reaches around to rub it out with her middle finger. I find the sound of a cork popping. My equivalent of New Age music. It relaxes me, knowing that the first drop is about to hit my lips. The glug of Prosecco pouring is my panpipes, its effervescence fizzing the whale sounds for others. Not today. I'll need the entire bottle, or several. Cheers to afternoon drinking!
Salute!
I down it in one, defeating my desire to appear cultured. Her lips purse. She looks like a cat's ass. Another?
No. In case I need to carry you to the beach.
I top my glass to the brim. Good thing you look strong. Do you know the way?
I'll follow the seagulls. So, how much longer until she arrives?
The one thing I have learned about Maria is that she is short on patience, always getting up during our Zoom calls, to fetch wine, make coffee, go to the loo. If she were my daughter, I'd tell her to stop being such a jack-in-the-box. Looking at the time, I'd say an hour, traffic-dependent.
Bueno, did she get an Uber?
No, she took a limo.
A limo?
She pre-booked it from Canada. Maria blinks rapidly. Are your eyes bothering you? I walk to the fridge to get the Optrex. Here you go. She tilts back her head, mouth open wide, reminding me of the fish I used to admire in the aquarium at school. The saline drips, splashing against her eyelashes. As they flutter, a small stream trickles down her face. Better?
Not really. It's just... a limo? Who does she think she is? Madonna?
I say nothing and concentrate instead on my yogic breathing, sans belly extension. Concave is the look I'm going for, not convex. Maria reaches for the Prosecco.
I hope the driver hurries. I want to hit the beach. It's not going to rain, is it?
Several hours pass, during which Maria catches me up on California life, her boyfriend, the nightclub where she sings, and the Mallorca drug trade. Eventually, we run out of topics. I have nothing to add. No one wants to hear how I haven't had sex in 3 years or slept in 13 due to one child or another keeping me up at night. I admire her shellac nails, hot pink with a ring on each pinky, each digit edged in diamante. She extends her hand. No wrinkles or age spots, only smooth skin. Don't! I stop her before she touches the Isle of Wight cherry tomatoes from the Araton Valley, roasted with balsamic vinegar and sea salt. Everything must remain perfect.
I'm starving. Just a small bite, please.
I have been on a diet for 40 days. If anyone is starving, it's me. How did Jesus do it? No, please wait until Marguerite arrives. I have arranged the tapas in tidy circles, coordinated by color with Mom's favorite face in the middle.
So pretty. I'll put it on Instagram.
How are you going to explain what's in the vase?
No one needs to know. Top up?
I should be looking after you. Let me pour. Oh dear, it's empty.
Darlings!
It's Marguerite, carrying two bags of duty-free. Gorge! Ah, I remember that I sometimes need to translate my English slang. Gorgeous!
Perfect timing. Here, let me help you.
Maria takes the duty-free to the counter. Marguerite looks over my head. Not a struggle, as she is 6 inches taller than me.
Where's your handsome husband?
At France, with the kids. He wanted to give us time on our own.
Aw, how considerate of him. Sweet man.
Is he? Once the kids are in bed, I imagine Catherine is preparing a delicious meal for them. A tête-à-tête by candlelight, straight out of the Nigella Lawson cookbook of seduction, with plenty of wine to lubricate his piston. Or is she married? I can't keep track, as all the women look the same in their sheer workout leggings, arriving at the school gate in identikit black Range Rovers. Do I care? No. Hey, they can have a ménage à trois. Either way, I hope Joe gets his kicks. Someone in this marriage has to. I have a feeling in the pit of my stomach that he'll return tomorrow to a pile of empties. My hangdog face and bird's nest hair. The smell of tonight's wine on my breath. Once the kids are in bed, he'll announce he wants a divorce. Or maybe he'll drop the kids at the door and send his intentions by text, taking the easy way out.
Show me to my room. It's been a long journey. I'd like to freshen up.
I thought you flew first class.
Oui, mon chéri. I've been traveling since yesterday. It's tiring being fabulous.
I pick up her suitcase. Never mind her, mademoiselle. Follow me. I forget how young Marguerite is. 20? 21? Barely out of boarding school in the nether regions of Quebec and, by her telling, educated by nuns with hearts of ice. On our last Zoom call, she surprised us by confessing her desire to remain a virgin. I suspect any day now she will get pregnant and claim it is by divine intervention. As we walk past the mirror, Marguerite's profile shows her resting bitch face I got to know during our Zoom calls. She must have inherited it from her French father. I wish I knew what I inherited from my father. The last day I saw our mother, she was animated, her expression changing from smiling to crying to smiling again in a space of time no longer than it took for me to think these words. Her face was always moving. Marguerite and Maria are as exotic as the places they were born. Me? I'm plain old Mary, the eldest, born in the States. Cedars Sinai, West Hollywood, to be exact. I have an American passport and an accent to prove it. My mother fled her London Irish Catholic family to reinvent herself in Hollywood, US of A. I am the product of the start of my mother's fag hag years. One of her self-proclaimed fags got her pregnant. He did the right thing by her as they got married in Vegas. The only photo I have of either of them is their wedding photo. My mother, 2 months pregnant, is not yet showing. My father, bald at a time it wasn't fashionable, sports a wispy beard. No wonder he was questioning his sexuality. He certainly hadn't followed the West Hollywood style guide for 1984. Until I was 7, it was just me and Mom when, using a lump sum from my dad, she shipped me off to Rodine, an English boarding school for girls in Sussex. Pacific Coast to Atlantic Coast. Forever facing away from my mom. I've been here ever since, having moved just 5 miles west along the shore. My accent makes me a permanent foreigner, which was no fun around the Brexit vote. During my 30 years of living here, I've often thought of getting a voice coach to work with me to change my accent to local with glottal stops or Thames Estuary or RP, but as my income does not meet my aspirations, I tell myself to forget about it. Since her funeral, I've learned that after Mom shipped me off to Sussex, she decided it was time to put her Spanish, picked up in California, to good use. And forgetting about me, she resumed her carefree, childless life in Mexico, where she pretended to be a virgin. She married an aristocrat with a bloodline to the conquistadors, who stood to inherit the family's plantation if he delivered an heir apparent. Maria told me he was a cold man, though his blood ran hot for a small, dark man in the barrio. It seems he had a master and servant fetish. Perhaps he still does. My mother, in her mind but not her reality, ever the good convent schoolgirl, felt it was her duty to save him. And the only way to do this was to marry and give his parents a grandson. It was a disappointment to them all when Maria was born. The aristocrat unhappy, his parents blaming her, themselves, their rosary and choice of prayers, their horoscopes, their tarot card readings. In his misery, Maria's father returned to whipping stable boys. They lived on the plantation until she turned 7. Then, just like me, Mom sent her to a boarding school, but this time in California. Here, she stayed for 9 years, perfecting her Baja accent, before leaving without qualifications to follow a barefoot, dreadlocked songwriter to Mallorca. With Maria gone, my mother put her O-level French to use and gave Gay Paris a whirl. And how gay it was. Continuing her predilection for homosexuals, she found a Parisian duke who needed to please his parents with a grandson so he could inherit the ancestral 17th century chateau. Instead, she gave him Marguerite. This happened when I was 16 and Maria 8, but neither of us knew it at the time. Both Maria and Marguerite are Thursday's child, which you will know from the nursery rhyme, has far to go. It's as if our mother knew from the moment of their conception that she would send them far away. Me? I'm Wednesday's child. Full of woe. Thanks, Mom. When we first met in London at Anne's funeral, we noticed that we have her eyes, green, almond-shaped, with long lashes. Irish eyes. We agree this is our favorite feature. Unlike me, both Maria and Marguerite are in touch with their fathers. They have grandparents, cousins, nephews, and nieces. And me? If you ignore my husband, he ignores me, after all. And my children. Marguerite and Maria are all I have. We have a lot of catching up to do. The three of us walk to the beach. Ducklings in a row, one behind the other, in pecking order by age. I lead, wheeling a trolley that holds grill, charcoal, lighter fuel and matches, a cooler full of meat, wine, and, as a welcome to Maria, a Tupperware pitcher of sangria, a picnic blanket, three towels, a windbreaker, and a few other bits and pieces.
How long until we get there?
She wanted to be driven. I said no, as we live only two streets away. Maria wanted to walk in heels. I said no for the same reason. Did you remember to bring the vase?
Got it!
Maria lifts it high as if it were the World Cup. A couple in their 20s walk past with the dog. The man stares at the vase. The woman's eyes flicker upwards for a moment before stooping to pick up poo. The dog pays her no mind. Careful! I am not sure if I am more concerned that Maria will drop the vase or her phone, knowing how expensive they are. We all wear swimsuits underneath our clothes, despite Maria insisting it was too cold. It's still 22 degrees, and the sun goes down in 2.5 hours.
Exactly. Too cold.
Fine weather means there isn't much space on the beach. We have to walk past four groins before we find a spot. Both Maria and Marguerite laugh at the word, groin. Get your mind out of the gutter. I sound like a mother. Just not ours. When we find a spot, it is next to a group of six boys, all about Marguerite's age. I find their drunken, loud behavior embarrassing.
We have sandy beaches at home, but we get the same crowds as here.
Ah, yeah. English stag doos, Brits abroad, Union Jack and all that.
No, I'm talking about Spanish men. They behave badly, just like Englishmen, but darker and slimmer.
Makes me wonder why we left Europe.
What? Why? What does shared behavior between different countrymen have to do with it?
I forgot Marguerite is reading political science at the University of Montreal. Note to self, no throwaway, ill-informed attempts at witticisms about politics. Do not mention Trudeau.
You are lucky. Mr. Sexy Trudeau is your prime minister.
He's only good for a photo op, and even then, not always. Especially if he's in blackface.
I have nothing to add, so I leave my sisters and go for a swim. I float, letting the waves take me out. I watch as the sun sets, leaving a legacy of pinks and oranges in wide brush strokes across the sky. When I reach the buoy, I turn back towards shore, a slow breaststroke, head up, shimmering around me. Shoals of sprats ruffle the flat sea. Mackerel fly past in fast pursuit. I wave at Maria. She waves back. I emerge from the water, less Bond girl, more beached whale. I look down to check, and I am grateful for the small mercy that my strapless one piece, with the elastic stretched to threadbare, has not slipped off. Now grey. I remember when it was black. Like my hair. I see my veins, visible through my translucent skin, blue with cold. Maria, dark mahogany tan, resplendent in a black bikini, has developed a heat rash.
How can this be? I'm freezing. Do you have any cream?
No, don't be such a wuss. I hand Maria a blanket. She wraps it around her shoulders. Where's Marguerite?
Fetching frozen margaritas.
Her words are a sharp melody made by chattering teeth. Marguerite, beautiful olive skin, smooth in a light blue ruched string bikini, barely covering her Brazilian, returns with a big bloke who, at over 6 feet tall, is even taller than her. He's carrying our drinks. A quick glance tells me he spends a lot of time at the gym. If he is local, he is most likely a footballer or a scaffolder.
Darlings, this is Luke.
Luke with a K or a C and no E. I want to make sure I get his name correct in case I bump into him at the Flowerpot Cafe.
It's Lucas, actually.
Lucas, actually. In Hove, actually. I snort with laughter at my joke. I take a sip of sangria. The bubbles out of my nose. Lucas, Maria, and Marguerite stare. It seems only I find myself funny. Marguerite and Lucas leave Maria and me to watch the anglers. The pissed, loud Englishmen are long gone. A gaggle of teenagers gather by a fire near the groin opposite. They look about 15. I thank my lucky stars I can't hear them. Please, tell me about your boyfriends. Please tell me you're having a lot of sex.
Isn't it a bit early for this?
The sun's gone down. Don't be such a prude.
I'm still Catholic.
Oh, we're all Catholic. Besides our eyes, that's the only thing we have in common.
Say, look. Are those puppies?
No, foxes. Don't you have them in Mallorca?
I don't know. I don't go into the wild. Why are they here?
They live here. We love our urban foxes.
So cute. Look, they're copulating.
I cover my ears against the vixen's screams. I haven't screamed in a long time. Marguerite returns with a bottle in each hand.
Did you hear that?
What have you got there?
You've been a while. Where's Lucas?
He had to go to a party.
And you didn't go with him?
No, silly. I'm here for my sister.
But you got his number.
Oh, of course.
I will always remember the assured look on her face. We lie on a blanket, our backs against the stones. I try not to worry about rats. I hope the foxes will keep them away.
Do you see that?
Maria points skywards. What?
Las Tres Marias.
Where?
There. Uno, dos, tres.
I squint before realizing it isn't going to help. I don't have a telescope. Do you mean Orion's belt?
That's what you want to call it.
Isn't that what everyone calls it?
No, not in Spanish.
Marguerite passes me a spliff.
Want some?
Fuck yeah. Don't tell Joe.
Who's Joe?
My husband, silly. You asked for him when you first arrived, don't you remember?
I've only met him on Zoom. Handsome.
Oh, you can have him.
Ooh, can I? Are you uncoupling?
No. Neither of you can. I take it back. I take him back.
I bet the sex is good.
One toke and you're already acting inappropriately.
Am I?
Marguerite blows a smoke ring.
Impressive.
You've had 3 children. To prove you've had sex at least that many times.
Let's move on, shall we?
Do you think our mother ever loved us?
That's a bit out of nowhere. No, I don't.
Did she ever visit you at school?
No.
Did she see you on the holidays?
Oui!
That's because you're the youngest. She was too old to have another baby.
Was she too old? She was only the 32 when she had me. Oh, maybe she loved me the best.
Face it. Anne never loved us. Not really. Not even you. I nod at Marguerite. She only loved herself.
No, that's
of
not...
Of course it is. We never saw her. She never told us about each other. She was busy living her life, reinventing herself with every new man and country. I'm only surprised she didn't change her name to India or Anastasia or Saffron.
I knew her as Anais.
And I knew her as Anna.
The alarm on my Fitbit goes off. 4 a.m. It is the time I get up most days so that I can have the house to myself before everyone wakes at 6:30. The tide is out, leaving miles of sand punctuated with rock pools. Besides the seagulls tapping for worms, we are the only ones left on the beach. It seems I needn't have kicked my family out of the house after all. We stand by the shore. Maria holds the vase. Marguerite pops open the champagne.
If life is a movie, isn't this where we're supposed to drop the vase? Or have her ashes blow back into our faces?
All the better we scatter the ashes now, before the wind picks up. Later today, I can drop the vase off at the charity shop.
What if I want it?
Then you can have it.
Thanks, but I don't.
I raise a toast to our mother. To everything, there is a season. A time for every purpose under heaven. A time to be born. A time to die. A time to plant.
Don't interrupt her. I like it.
Maria rubs my back. Though no amount of rubbing will free a genie to grant our wishes. I ran out of wishes the day after I last saw Anne. We continue drinking as we walk into the spring tide towards the buoy. We stop as the water comes just below my waist and Maria's shoulders. It was a red flag on the day our mother swam out. The tide was high, the wind over 40 miles per hour. Why do you think she came here to die? I hear only the gulls overhead. It feels like forever before Maria speaks.
Because she didn't love us enough. Because she didn't want to grow older. Because she was menopausal and depressed about it. Because she noticed she was becoming less attractive to men. Because she felt she was invisible for the first time in her life and didn't like it. Once she was out of her baby-making years, handsome gay men no longer needed her as a beard, because despite having 3 children and 3 grandchildren, she felt lonely.
For a moment, we don't say anything. Our silence louder than the surf. I can't stand it.
How do you know? I think she loved us.
Maybe I let her die. She came to see me. For the first time ever, mind you. Feel my face turn red. I normally turn blue in the water. She met her grandchildren. They were so happy to meet her, though they thought it a little odd.
I mean, who meets their grandchildren only once and then kills herself? I'd be livid.
Because I am. I say nothing.
I often think that with every new husband, she was trying to reinvent herself and create her image of a perfect family.
What? Despite the cold water, I feel hot. Our mother is the beautiful, ever-youthful, virginal Anne. A gay man only she could save, and a daughter born a disappointment so that she had to ship her far, far away? I'm frankly surprised her husband's names weren't all Joaquin. Jesus, even my husband's name is Joe.
My father's name is Joaquin.
We look out at the sound of a motor, a boat heading towards the first catch of the day. I could have let her stay.
Did she ask to?
No.
See? She came to say goodbye. Did she apologize?
Yes. How did you know?
Because she called us.
To see what?
You're gonna find out things about me.
That I hope you like.
Were we the things? I take the vase and hug it to my chest. sea glistens in the morning light. I try to steady myself against the gentle pull of the tide. Sand and seaweed squishes around my toes. I tap around in search of solid footing. Is there any hope for us?
Yes. Lots of hope. An entire lifetime of hope.
We stand together and say nothing. I could stand here forever. A seagull flies low overhead. It shits in my hair. Now seems like a good time.
Uno, dos, tres!
At Maria's count of three, we each hold our breath and go under the water. I hold the vase. Amrutha's ashes wash away. It's 8 a.m. We're back at my house. Maria is dancing in the lounge. All night long, blares from her phone. Marguerite is curled in the fetal position on the sofa. I have never felt so awake in all my life. And then there is Joe, standing in the middle of the room. He doesn't go to turn the music down. Where are the kids?
Still at their friends.
And you?
Well, I'm here, aren't I?
Joe smiles. It is the same smile he had on the first day we met, all those years ago. He steps forward, his arms open. I link arms with Maria, and we each take his hand. Marguerite rolls over us. We are family, plays. Her three sharp snores keep beat with the chorus.
Anne, written, directed, and produced by Kristen Berniston. Mary, read by Ellie Tipping. Maria, read by Iniki Mariano. Marguerite, read by Florrie Antoniou. Lucas and Joe, read by Theo Greenwood.
I absolutely loved listening to Anne. I've read this story a couple of times. Obviously, I worked on it in the West Hill Writers Anthology, and it's just so great to hear it in a different format. Kristen, what was it like when you first listened to it? You must feel really proud.
Oh, no, I was terrified, actually. I mean, the actors and actresses were fantastic, and they were just wonderful and really helpful, and they brought their own take to it. And, you know, we had, on the day of recording, we had a couple of people had to drop out either because of COVID or other work that came in. And so other people had to step in. And I feel very grateful for the generosity that was shown to me. And I also feel very grateful for all the kind words and the personal takes, you know, the personal interpretation that the actors brought to the piece. But, you know, as you can hear, I have a transatlantic accent, and I was absolutely terrified to hear what my lovely actors' accents were like. And, you know, everyone I know who's listened to it, and either people who've reached out to me who are strangers, have come back to me and said they've loved the voices. They particularly love the main character, Mary's voice, a voice by Ellie Tipping. And I just am very, very proud. And I'm also very grateful because I'm aware of how much time Duncan spent with me in post-production, and to really be very particular and very patient with my concerns over certain sounds and certain placement of sounds.
So let's talk about placement of sounds, because I really thought the sound effects were great. I thought they were lovely, and I thought they were really evocative of Brighton as a setting. Duncan, how do you sound effects work? This might sound like a silly question to you when translating to audio.
Well, firstly, a lot of the credit here for the sound effects themselves needs to go to Christopher Nathan, who supplied a lot of them, almost all of them. But it's certainly... you know, a skill set in itself. You can't just go down to the sea with a mic and you know, record the sea. There's a lot more to it than that. You'll probably find there's a lot of wind, sound of the wind gushing past the microphone when you listen back on what you're doing. So it is, you know, a tremendous, you know, skill set, really. So, and what Christopher supplied was great. And we used a few extra bits and pieces. And then it was about, well, how do we apply this and what length and at what point and the spacing between, you know, lines and takes and so forth. And it's, as I said, I used the jigsaw analogy before. It's kind of like we had all of these strands of sound, which we had then had to compile into the half hour piece, which you've just heard. So, thanks, Christopher, again. So, but from that, we then took that source material and then applied it into the full production.
I also want to add that Christopher was fantastic at interpreting the story. When he first read it, he got back to me immediately and was really complimentary. And he thought that the story was very beautiful. And one of the things that inspired me to work with Christopher is that he brought his own ideas. He was asking about, you know, should we do a backstory? He had all kinds of ideas for sound. And poor Christopher, I had to slightly dampen his enthusiasm. He does all these wonderful audio for Doctor Who episodes for fan radio, if you like, for fan podcasts. And he's fantastic at his craft. But it was about tempering his enthusiasm whilst also keeping it going, because he had so many great ideas. And it's just an absolute joy to work with him as Duncan, as the actors who are so inspired by the story that they bring their own take to it.
We had our own BBC phonographic workshop there. You know, they came up with the Doctor Who theme, didn't they? Delia Derbyshire and co. I'm getting a bit geeky now, so I'll stop there.
I don't know.
Kristen, what advice would you give to anyone trying to put their work to audio? Because recording it is one thing, but distributing it and getting it in front of people is another one. How does that all work?
Okay, so first of all, dealing with the making it, be prepared that for a different format, your work will change. It has to change, otherwise it won't be good enough. It'll be boring for the listener. So accept the fact that you might have to cut bits, you might have to add bits, and that, you know, like reading a book, reading a short story, watching a film, watching a TV show, listening to audio, every format is the same. And stories, if they have a universality, can be stretched and condensed according to the format that they're released in. In terms of getting it made, well, again, I have a Lewis connection. I attended a podcasting group in Lewis and happened to meet a group of people who are wanting to get work out. I found out how to do it. I met someone there called Martin Nathan, who was willing to first put it out on his podcast. And we just recorded it. It seemed relatively simple. Of course, all these things, there's a cost to them and there's a time commitments. But in terms of creating, it just seems one step up from writing. It's a lot simpler than film, if you like. It seems a lot more accessible and open to a range of people.
With recording a podcast, there's something quite empowering about it, because you're not restricted by anyone or anything. Technically, kind of the powers above. And I know that your background is working for kind of bigger music companies and creators. Was there something really that appealed to you about this kind of indie sense of creation?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, because you have that complete sense of creative control over what you're doing and the output. And it's the ultimate, isn't it? It's like a, you know, it's like a indie music label, so to speak. And that's the great thing about it. You know, there's no kind of input to censor your work or to, you know, rein in what your creative vision is.
Absolutely. So, Kristen, what's next for you? Are you going to carry on with audio? We're going to go screenwriting, novels? Where are you at the moment?
Oh, gosh, everything. And I'm trying not to stretch myself too thin. I'm definitely going to continue with audio. I really loved doing this. I loved the whole process. And it's something that Duncan and I and a producer, Lisa Kill, is looking at doing. This morning, I submitted a play, so watch this space. And this week, I'm beginning to rewrite my great menopause novel, and I'm finishing a TV pilot which is set in the Midwest of America, 1990 crime fiction.
That sounds wonderful. And how about you, Duncan?
I want to dramatize, or at least do an audio version of my short story that appeared, Let the Good Times Roll, appeared in the anthology, the West Hill anthology. As I mentioned before, I'm working on a novel set in Silicon Valley, which kind of talks about how far a person might go to gain wealth and power in that environment. And it, I guess in part, you know, there's an element of, perhaps to bring it to life a bit, there's an element of American Psycho in Silicon Valley, or perhaps it's a tech version of Kill Your Friends, the John Niven book. A little bit of that, but but with a lot more besides. So that's a lot of fun writing that. And I've got the memoir I spoke about before. Yeah, going forward, I write a Substack, as I mentioned, regularly as well. So I'm always busy, always writing.
Yeah, that's what we love to hear. Kristen, what are the books that you think everyone should read, and the books that have really helped you with your own writing?
Okay, so books I think everyone should read. There's a lot out there, but the most recent one I've read this year is by Barbara Kingsolver, Demon Copperhead. The opening, the first two pages, to me, if I can write anything to that level, would just, I'll die happy. I mean, I've shown the first two pages to everyone and just said, this is why you read fiction, this is why you write fiction. So I'm going to go back and read her entire catalog, because I so was gripped. I mean, it was the first book in ages where I'd, you know, clear my diary and go to bed early so I could read undisturbed. In terms of what I think everyone should read, there's actually a book by Judith Weston, which is Directing Actors. And I actually think it's better than most self-help books. I think everyone who works in business or sport or anything should read this. It really is a how-to on how to conduct your life and how to conduct yourself in business. And it's meant for directors, directing actors, but it's a character study. And I know that it's not character, but what I mean is that when I'm writing, whether it's scripts or fiction, or whether I'm doing more businessy writing, I'm now thinking about her words of wisdom and applying them.
That's great, thank you. And how about you, Duncan?
I would pick for books I think everyone should read, I would firstly pick George Orwell's 1984. I think it's such a strong piece of work and so important, and it still applies to what's happening around us in the world today as well. I brought a copy here, but that didn't really work very well on radio. But I'd also add, I really enjoyed Deborah Levy's three-part memoir series, Things I Don't Want to Know, The Cost of Living in Real Estate. And I'm also currently reading Annie Ernaux's The Years, which Deborah Levy comments is one of her favourite books ever. And the third book I'd pick, though, would be Patrick Susskind's Perfume. I really enjoyed that. I think that's definitely one I'd recommend if you haven't read it already. The way he writes and really does bring the smell of perfume to life in that book. So I definitely recommend that one as well.
Thank you very much, both of you. Some great recommendations there. So I'm going to start with you, Kristen, but I would love to know this is kind of a two-parted question. Firstly, any general writing advice that you have had that's really stuck with you and that you use in your writing? And any advice for anyone who might be feeling a bit shy about getting involved in Brighton's writing community?
Okay. So to answer the first question, just keep writing and don't be precious about the edit. I mean, even when you've written beautiful work, it might not be suitable for the story. So just because you're being edited, or let's say someone doesn't like your work, doesn't mean that someone else doesn't like your work. You have to lose your preciousness. Writing, this is a solo act, but it is actually a collaborative act if you want to get it out there, because even if you don't have anyone else edit your work, which would be very unusual, someone's going to read it. And that itself, I think, is a collaboration. It's a communication. So just be prepared to cut, slice, change, once you are dealing with a universal message, which hopefully your writing is, people are going to want to engage with that and then they'll comment on it. In terms of feeling shy about joining the Brighton community, honestly, it is the friendliest, most open group of people I've ever met. Every day I can't get over how creative Brighton is. And in some ways quite unassuming, full of braggarts, just people getting on with it. And if you happen to join a group and they aren't friendly, which would be unusual, find another. There's so many. And what's so nice is that you build firm friends and collaborators through these groups. And over the years, it's very satisfying to these people that you've started writing with. They'll get their own book deals if that's what they want. They'll write poetry. You'll see these same people at a range of events and you cheer each other on as they grow and develop their own work, which is only a wonderful thing.
Thank you. That's really lovely. How about you, Duncan? Firstly, what advice would you give anyone who maybe wants to get involved in Brighton's writing community? And what writing advice has really stuck with you?
And I would say, well, get involved, come along to events. A lot of events happening in Brighton. And as Christian mentions there, it's a very, very welcoming, warm groups out there of writers down here that are really friendly and, helpful. And get involved, go to events. I say there's Real Writer Circle as well. I recommend their events. In terms of, and I'd also add, go to events and get to know people that way. In terms of advice on writing, it's really just a continuation of just keep writing. But also, to Christian's point, don't ever get precious about, a beautiful piece of writing that you've got if it doesn't, fit the story and the narrative that you're trying to aspire to. Share your work with people that will give you honest, constructive feedback as well, and keep redrafting, until you get to that stage where you feel you can't do anything more with that piece. And at that point, then you'll want to, go further with your ambitions. And keep writing around, keep two or three projects going, perhaps. People work in different ways. Find a routine that works for you. Some people can't find a routine. Sometimes I can't. But, the main thing is just keep writing and keep reading around your genre, and more broadly than that, outside your genre as well, because I found that helpful. And I guess the other thing, sharing your work is the key thing as well. So write, read, share.
Thank you both so much for joining us. If you want to read Duncan's Substack, Duncan, how can people do that?
You can find it under the name Duncan Illing Writes on Substack.
How can we find and follow you on socials, both of you, Kristen?
Oh, follow me on Instagram. It's Kristen B. Writes.
Wonderful. And where are you on Instagram, Duncan?
So Duncan Illing on Instagram. I'm also on all the others, but Instagram's a good one to find me on. And
well, thank you so much for joining us and for bringing the wonderful Anne into our lives and our ears. And I wish you both the best of luck with everything.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brighton Book Club on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. If you would like to listen to this show again or to any of our previous shows, you can do so on any podcast platform. Just search for the Brighton Book Club. If you have a pitch or idea for the show, you can email us at btnbookclub@gmail.com, and you can follow us on Instagram at btnbookclub. We will see you next month. Precious.